B-Pod Studios.
Live on Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center. Solak and Bertrand, presented by DCU, Digital Federal Credit Union, on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand, hour number two from Radio Row in Atlanta. This hour of coverage from Atlanta brought to you by our friends at Spiegel Scrap Metal. We're now joined in the Big Y world-class market guest chair, voice of the New York Giants, also on NFL Radio and Sirius Radio. Bob Papa is with us. How are you?
Guys, how are you? This is old hat for you guys.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, this is the fourth and fifth years. And did you ever think there was a stretch when you guys are winning against you-know-who, us, that this would be the Giants dynasty? Maybe we go on a 4 out of 5 year type run.
Well, you know, in 08, their 08 team, of their 7 team and the 11 team, the 42 and 46 Super Bowl teams, and you ask any guy to a man, including the former head coach, the 08 team was the best team. They were 10-1. They had beaten Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. They had beaten the Cardinals in Arizona, and then Plaxico Burress shot himself in the leg. And he was the difference maker. Philadelphia had no answer for him. He ate the Eagles up.
Literally shot himself in the
leg. Literally shot himself in the leg.
Accident.
Yeah, accidentally shot himself in the leg at a nightclub.
Accidentally brought a gun into a nightclub in the waistband of his sweatpants.
So he shoots himself in the leg, and that freed up Brian Dawkins to come down and play the run more. Burress had some of his greatest games against the Eagles. They just could not match up with them. The Giants wound up, they had the number one seed in the NFL that year, in the NFC. They had beaten Carolina, and then they opened up against Philly, and they didn't have Plaxico, and that was a big difference in their run. Yeah. And Tom Coughlin, to this day, has not gotten over that. Because that was our best team.
Ellis Hobbs had an issue matching up on Plaxico.
Yeah, it wasn't a good matchup. Like, what are you doing playing bump and run on the outside?
And that team had a chip on their shoulder because everybody kind of looked at the win against the Patriots and they're like, well, you know, Tyree caught the ball on his helmet. So that team was committed to validate what they had done the year before against the Patriots. And they were rolling people, you know, out to that 10-1 start and then boom in the leg, and that's the end of that.
Does the second Super Bowl for the Giants validate the first? I always think it does.
Yeah, I mean,
anybody can win one, you know, as the saying goes, but you win two, that changes things.
Yeah, I mean, they had a good team that year, and Eli Manning was fantastic. That he pretty much carried the team. You know, until the playoffs started, they were ranked 31st in the NFL in rushing and yards per carry. Now, you always think of the Giants as a run team.
Yeah.
But it was Eli Manning throwing to Keem Nicks and Victor Cruz and Mario Manningham all season
that
carried that team. God.
Yeah. The throw on the sideline down there in Indy.
Yeah,
and I was 5 yards from him. I was doing sidelines at the time. Gino were in the booth. And he literally, his feet are in, and there's the three-foot white stripe. And he's literally got both hands 3 feet outside it like this, catching, making the catch. And I said, he's got it. He caught that son of a, you know what.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we
talked. That was the best throw I think Eli's ever made.
It's one of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even the touchdown pass to Cruz on the opening drive of the game, he fit that ball through about four different people with linebackers cutting underneath. But, you know, you think about, like, and we talk about how bad the officiating is in the NFL.
Yeah.
But think about the fact in real time, they got the Manningham play correct on the field. They got the Edelman catch in the Super Bowl correct.
Yeah.
When it looked like there's no way. I'm doing the game on international TV. Yeah. I do the game for NFL, for international TV.
And you have to do it in a different language?
No, we do it in English.
That's nice.
Are you doing this one?
Yeah.
You are doing this one.
Charles Davis from Fox.
Nice.
He and I do. We've done it together now the last 5 years or whatever. But they got the Edelman play right.
Right.
Think
which nobody thought was going to hold up. It's like, oh, no, he didn't catch that.
Yeah.
He did.
And he knew it. I mean, that's one that he knew.
Well, I know, but not to go off track.
Yeah, we've compared it.
We've compared that with the last.
With the muffed.
With the muff punt.
The non-muff in Kansas City.
Edelman's reactions are priceless because on the catch, he is like, no, I caught it. I caught it. You're not going to believe it, but I caught it.
Right.
And the muff punt, he's like, I don't think I touched it.
Maybe.
I don't know. But his reaction,
weird, Kansas City, and I'm like, he didn't move. Like, if he thought he touched it, you start at least take a step to chase the guy. Like, yeah. I got to go get him.
He knew he was cooked.
He
as
just
soon
gets
as
up and points right to the video board. Like, I didn't touch it.
He's yeah. confident.
What do you make? What do you make of the Saints thing?
It's terrible.
It's awful. Yeah. Can you imagine doing a play-by-play for the Saints? You think you got this thing wrapped up, and it just...
Boy, you want to talk about Heartbreak Hotel, the way their last two seasons have ended.
Oh, on God, that's right.
Minnesota Miracle.
Oh, my God, the Dicks play.
That doesn't so happen 99 out of 100 times.
I forgot about
the
that.
Guy gets tackled.
Yeah. They've had a rough couple of years.
Oh.
Well, and it, how much will that be compounded as it happened last year, the Minnesota Miracle, and then Minnesota just gets annihilated.
Right.
And yeah. then if the Rams don't somehow put up a good effort, which I think they will, and I think it's going to be a good game. But the Saints are going to look at both of those outcomes from the last 2 years
could've
and say,
should've.
If we were there, I guarantee we would have been, or we would have given a better effort either in last year's NFC Championship
they would've.
Or in the Super yeah. Bowl this year. Of course they would have. Against the Eagles last year, they would have been so much better than Minnesota.
They were playing great. And remember, Philadelphia was vulnerable. I mean, Atlanta had four cracks from the five-yard line to knock them out the week before, and for some reason they couldn't score a touchdown. But it's interesting because that's just – but some of that thing with the Saints was they mismanaged it. I mean, once Ginn made the catch at the 2 minute warning, right. evidently Sean Payton called a run and Breeze audibilized out of it, checked out of it, threw a pass, incomplete, stopped, which led to that instead of bleeding the clock, kicking the field goal with no timeouts for the Rams.
There's no way the Rams tried down after that. No time. Like I think
it would have been like 40 seconds with no timeouts.
Kansas City is a team that I think. Because of Hill and because of the way the kid throws the ball. You didn't play Kansas City this year, right? You didn't call
no,
me.
No.
Wait to see this kid throw in real time. Mahomes. I mean, he's it's LYS type stuff.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Hall of Fame stuff Saturday. I know Eli's not up, but we've had this discussion back
and forth. Is Eli in for you?
Is Eli in for you? He's got two Super Bowls.
Yeah, he's not going to get in the first ballot. Right. He's not a jump-the-line guy because if people are going to look at the back end of his career and there's these losing seasons and everything else, which if you look at the if you study the coach's tape, he hasn't faded. And the throw he made against the Colts near the end of the season to Sterling Shepard, 55 yards after getting flushed out of the pocket to his left and hitting the guy in stride.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's not shot. But he'll have to be debated. Because of the way the back end of his career has gone. Now, who knows what's going to happen next year? You know, what if he leads the team to the playoffs next year?
Yeah. I mean, they'd say, you look at the way the Patriots run the ball at the end of the year, and it's helped Brady, I think. Your back's pretty special, though, the kid from
Barkley's pretty good.
He's that good, huh?
He's even a better person. He's a better person. Like, he, from the very beginning.
Pittsburgh kid, man.
Yeah, signing autographs, and he does all the right things. And. You know, Eli has talked about this as far as Barkley's study habits are off the charts. Like, he's devouring film, he asks good questions, and he's always looking to learn. So he's not mailing it in. He's not coming in with a posse and, you know, thinking he's
so he's not like
your
receiver, you know.
100% different.
You've got more of a national perspective on things, you know. And I know
by the way, Ty Law has got to get in this year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh. It's the best
we just had him on our show on Sirius.
Oh, he's
we just
here?
Had him. No, he's not here. We had him on the phone.
All right. Charlie got him.
He's got to get in, man. The Patriots have to get somebody in from this run now.
We got some
we
good stuff
a bit
from
about this yesterday.
Sal Palantonio yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the dominant teams, whether it's the Steelers of the 70s, Cowboys of the 90s, Niners of the 80s and 90s.
Hey, he gave the Bears stat, too, right? Where the Bears have like eight guys
in the Super Bowl. They won one.
Yes,
for 1 year.
Yeah, he's got to get in. So, I mean, look, Ed Reed and Tony Gonzalez are the jump-the-line guys, and I guess a lot of people feel that Champ Bailey's the jump-the-line guy, so that leaves only two spots. But Ty Law's, to me, Ty Law and Kevin Mawai would get my votes.
Mawai was one of the dirtiest, nastiest, nicest guys I ever played with. That makes sense. I had him with the Jets like for a year, and he was gritty, man. That dude would just... Oh,
his rookie year, he started 14 of 11 games, and then he went on a stretch. For 10 consecutive years of 16 for 16.
Yeah, but he also was great.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, the consecutive games.
He used to lead our prayer studies. He's a big FCA guy, and then he would say, bleep your mother during the games. The stuff that would come out of this guy's mouth. I'm like, who is this man? It's like Jekyll and Hyde.
Well, Charlie Weiss, who I did the show with this morning, he said, you know, we were able to do things with Kevin Mawai that you don't normally do with centers because we pulled the center. He goes, and there's not a lot of guys athletic enough to actually do that and do it at a high level.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. Yeah. So I think most of New England would agree that Ty Law should be in and should get in. The one that's sort of more of a question right now is Richard Seymour because he's another guy that's been on the list and has become a finalist. And What are your thoughts on him?
I think he's a Hall of Famer, but again, just think about these voters. They can only put five in.
Yeah, it's not easy to get in.
These like, guys that you think are in that don't have great numbers, the second one of these guys like a Champ Bailey or Tony Gonzalez pop up, oh, that guy's, like you said, jumped the line.
Champ should be in. Ty Law should be in.
Right.
I mean, there's not that many great corners.
Sometimes you get screwed being on the list when you see all these other guys are definite. Like, you know, definite. You see their name, you say their name, boom. Right.
It's funny because when Strahan was up for the Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility, people that work at the Giants, they were getting stuff ready for the internet so that when the vote came out, they could put it out there on social media and have Giants.com. I said, be careful. I said, don't get your hopes up because look at some of the guys that have been waiting, yeah, that, like, there's a little bit of a pecking order. And sure enough, you didn't get in the first
year.
I mean, they can only put five in. I know these guys take a lot of heat, but it's really not fair because if you look at that list of the finalists right now, there's 10 guys that you automatically would say, that guy's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But they can only put five in.
Sucks.
And Ed Reed and Gonzalez are definitely jumping the line.
No doubt.
Yeah.
First Bob, one final one for you. I was about to say, you know, you've got, being on Sirius, more of a national view of what the conversation is this week. What is it about the Patriots and about this game? I mean, it feels, being here, that
narrative just...
Everything's just sort of Patriots here this week. It's like Dan Shaughnessy, who was with us, was saying, is there another team here? Because the Rams are not getting a lot of play in the conversation leading up to this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's the brilliance of Brady and Belichick. I mean, and it's the marvel of their consistency. And this has been a really resilient team. I mean, because
they were dead in the water six, seven weeks ago.
And you look on paper and you go position by position, and you look at the Rams roster, and there's a lot more guys on the Rams roster than you'd want on the Patriots roster. But
true,
it's collection, it's team, it's the greatest quarterback of all time pulling the trigger, and it's the greatest head coach in the history of the sport figuring out a way, whatever they're going to take away, my guess is Belichick will have an alternative plan. And, you know, if they look to take Edelman away and they look to take Gronk, they'll split James White out, yep, and they'll create a matchup problem in the passing game, and White will wind up having 12 catches.
All right.
All right, pal.
Well, enjoy the call. Well, have a good call.
You know I'm pulling for.
Yeah.
Even though, so I'm doing the game on international TV, yeah, so no one's probably watching this internationally. But I'm pulling for the Patriots.
That's nice of you. Because you know why? Because you got that fourth preseason hell game next year, and you got to come to our place. Well, I don't get stuck at that Newark airport. Oh, my God.
But but I've known Coach Belichick since 1988.
I know.
So I have all the respect in the world for him. He's very generous with his time whenever we need him for stuff. And
you're a legend, man. Because we do again at Bob. I'm, you know, obviously, Bob's walking around. He goes, oh, it's Bob Papa. I just want to be him one day.
Who said that?
Bob Sosa.
Oh, he's great.
I know. But he's like, he just thinks you're impeccable, man.
I don't know about that.
Great dresser. And, you know, everything.
Oh,
Top notch.
Sosa right wants to be Bob Pop.
Well, you know what? I'd like to
I grew up with, like, Joe Montana hanging on my thing. He grows up. There's him. Who's that? Who'd he cry before? Vince Scully when he sang.
Oh, man.
Went Beneath My Wings when Vince sang it. Bob said he shed a tear. I go, we ripped on that.
Fordham guy, Vince Scully.
I know. What are you going to do?
All right, guys.
All right,
well,
buddy.
Enjoy it,
thanks,
man.
Bobby.
Have fun.
Appreciate
thanks for having me. As always.
Appreciate you stopping by.
We'll see you at the stadium.
With us here on Zolak and Bertrand from Radio Row in Atlanta.
It's Zolak and Bertrand live on Radio Row, presented by DCU, Digital Federal Credit Union, on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I know what you're going to say. I know you like the back. Almost. I think I know you like the back of my hand, but I know what you're going to say, Coach. Tom came out and said that he has a lot of football left in him, and there's zero chance he's retiring. But at some point, Tom probably will retire. And I know you're calculated. You're always three or four steps ahead of everybody. Have you already started thinking about the next steps without Tom, if he decides to retire, if he's there for one more year, two more years, whatever the case may be? Does that ever go through your mind?
Well, you always have to plan ahead for your football team. We have a schedule, and we're going to play games next year. But right now we're just totally focused on this game, the great opportunity against the Rams. And I'm not going to worry about next year until at least Monday.
That's Willie McGinnis talking with his former head coach, Bill Belichick, last night at opening night at the Allstate Arena here in Atlanta. That's a non-answer from Bill Belichick. That's how I view that. Or that's how I hear it.
Steady.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. He's not giving you anything there.
Standard.
There's no insight. Said, yeah, we have a schedule next year. We'll play games next year, but yeah. I won't worry about that until at least Monday.
Right.
That's not until at least until we get to Monday. So I don't think there's anything to read into there. Dan, did you think there was anything in that?
I heard it the way you heard it.
Yeah.
And again, I like when he does that because, you know, he's talking to people he knows, and he's, you know, that was Willie, right? Again.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like code going on there. You know, like Willie's, I know you can't answer this, but I'm going to do it. He was like, yeah, you know that I know we can't answer this, but we'll do this. And I thought everybody was well served. You know, it's a little bit of a exercise in futility, but everybody did their job, as they say.
Yeah, they all did their job.
Yep.
617-779-0985. We'll have Dan States coming up in just a bit. You're on Zolak and Bertrand. You'll also hear from Dante Scarnecchia this hour. This hour of coverage from Radio Row is brought to you by Spiegel Scrap Metal. Barbara is in Beverly today. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, you guys.
Hi.
Last time I called, I was really nervous, so I forgot to say I was happy to see all of you back, including Zoe. And I just wanted to say that the 15 seconds that Jared Goff doesn't have McVay in his helmet, do you think Belichick's going to do something with the defense, just switch it up real fast?
That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good question, Bob.
High-end question.
You know what's going to be interesting, too, here is now they dealt with noise with the Saints. A lot of people, and I asked, you know, the two individuals with the UMass connections that are helping to coach Jared Goff, you know, is there too much being made of this? He goes, yeah, we'll give a little tidbit here or there. It's, you know, it's cover two, or hey, don't take the sack here, little things like that that you put into it. It's a good question, though, because if you get conditioned as a quarterback to have that guy there to lean on, and then boom, you take that thing away, you're not allowed to grow. I think that's one thing that could impede the development of Goff, where he could just be a system guy and be under the guidance and tutelage of McVay and never really just make the offense his own. Who knows? It's a good question, though.
Yeah, I think
you're talking about shifting the front or showing a coverage, walking up, showing cover zero, and then backing everybody out at the snap. Yeah, they could do that.
I think it would be a really good way of confusing him.
I'll be watching it. That's one thing I'll be watching. I'll peek at the clock, see if Goff's looking to the sideline. Is we at 15, 14? Now let's see what New England does. What do they show?
Yeah, yeah. I also think that this is a game where you go back to what you did against Phillip Rivers. Cut him loose. Yeah. Let's go. Let's see if we can get to the quarterback. Let's pressure him. Let's force him into quick decisions.
Yeah,
let's force him
fast.
To make mistakes.
Yep. Let's go to the buffet.
A big part of this offense, this Rams offense this year, has been big throws down the field and fitting the ball into tight windows. I mean, he's done that at times, and he's done that, and they've been really successful with that. But that's a lot harder to do when you have guys in your face, and you're getting there early, and you're pressuring the quarterback, and you're making your look different right before the ball is being snapped.
Right.
Confuse him, pressure him.
The most difficult throws, and Brady's talked about it, when you got guys coming at you in the middle, you know, those are the tough throws because you don't want people at your feet, man. You want to be able to move. You want to be able to set your feet, slide a little bit.
We talked to Kyle Van Noy last night a little bit, and you'll hear that coming up as well. The running backs are a big, big deal in this game. And for the Rams, I think the way they're going to maybe try and beat some of that stuff, though, is dump it off to a running back, right?
Yeah.
And don't get torched. Don't get torched on those plays. But if that's the best that they can sort of muster up and you've taken away the big playability of their offense, on the balance, you're going to have a good night. So if you can't stop everything, I don't think that's a worst-case scenario for the Patriots if they get Todd Gurley mismatch on linebackers and they want to take advantage of that. Go ahead. Take advantage of that. If that's all you can do, have at it.
Okay. Can I flip that around and ask you an X's and O football question? Ooh. You would love to do? I love this. Okay. So on the flip side of that, we know Brady hasn't been touched in the two playoff games.
Right.
And we know against the Chargers it was the cover three and the zone and letting the backs release and all that. What do the Rams do to keep him, to get in his face? I mean, do you take away the backs at the line? What do you do to make sure you can get in his face with the inside rush?
You've got to hope that you have the same type of front that the Giants had. That Bob Pop was just here talking about those Super Bowl years with Strahan, where you widen your ends, they go outside to the tackles, so now all of a sudden those tackles are stuck taking those guys. Now it's about what do you do with Sue and Donald? Do you flip them? Do you put one on the center? Do you shade one there? They play it wider. They'll go outside the guards. So they'll line up the inside guys inside the guards, outside the guards, then the outside ends outside the tackles. And there's a big gap in the middle. So it's a sort of a bleep tease that do you want to make them check to a run? So where's that backer at? You know, is there any twists that they're going to play? I think you got to move. You got to get guys in the move. You just stand there straight. These guys, these guards, and this center, David Andrews, you look at him, you couldn't pick him out of the line if he's right. walking down the street. But he is dirty. He's nasty. He will get after you. He'll scratch. He'll claw. If you just line up in front of him, they'll wall you off. And some of these big suckers, you heard him talking after the game last week. Oh, we got Sue. Good. I think that's a guy that they feel that they can trap. If he's coming in the hole, boom, you bring – here comes Marcus Cannon on an inside pull. Knock him right in the air. You got a fullback in Devlin. They could chip on him too and get up to the backers. He should be able to run on his team. Get him going upfield and just, you know, trap the hell out of him.
I just can't believe Brady's – there can't have been two playoff games back-to-back where the quarterback was not touched. I mean, his uniform was clean at the end of both games.
Yeah, they can't have that happen again this year.
I mean, are you kidding me?
And the Rams have a good offensive line. The Patriots did not get to Nick Foles last year, never really got there.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody that plays the Patriots walks away saying, oh, he gets rid of the ball so quickly. We didn't know. Well, you do know.
Right.
So figure it out.
Let's go to Jim, who's in Everett. Jim.
Jimbo.
Hey, I got a question about sports betting.
Okay.
All right.
Do you think that the North States had a sports betting, you think that the ratings for the Super Bowl will be higher than usual?
Probably not. I think the ratings for the Super Bowl are so high to begin with, and anyone who would be willing to go bet on it is probably already watching the game. Now, if you're talking about regular season ratings, you know, neutral games that yeah. – if you're talking about, hey, will the 4 o'clock window on Sundays yeah. when someone doesn't have their team playing in the game, do you think it'll benefit from gambling? Yes, I do. I do, because what you're going to get is football fans who watch more football – because they are now able to so easily bet on it.
Yeah.
But for a game like the Super Bowl, I don't think it's going to see that big of a change, if at all.
I had a discussion with Stadler and Waldorf about this on the Patriots post-game show over on Patriots.com.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's after the conference or after the divisional. But
him was.
You know, I was talking about, you know, what the NFL would wish for ratings-wise, and they both said, correctly after I looked it up, the Super Bowl is pretty much ratings-proof. Yeah. Like, you go yeah. back over the
it's
last
the most watched television years, program of the year.
It's
every
like,
year.
It's a tick different, you know, from yeah. year to year. And now, how much of that is based on you've got, you know, Tom Brady playing and so many of them here recently and, you know, the big names that you know about and it's a worldwide, you know,
Hardy,
factor. But
how much of it comes from just the margin of error in the recording of the ratings?
I yeah, mean, it's just
it's a massive amount of data.
So big that, it, you know, even if it had been Rams and, you know,
let's
Rams Chiefs.
Way. Let's put it this way. If you're buying a commercial on the Super Bowl, are you buying it based on what the number is on the ratings? No, you're buying it based on everybody I know watches the Super Bowl, so that's all I need to know.
Right.
America watches the game.
Right. There's a commercial price isn't going to be any different based on who the teams are playing in it.
Right.
It's just, it's huge. So, but I totally agree with your point, Beetle. You take a random week 6 game next season.
Yeah, talk to me in October.
Yeah.
When a random 1 o'clock game gets a good number and you're like, how did this happen?
Yeah. Or in a, you know, in a state where it normally, you know, wouldn't do that great. If that state now has legalized sports betting, maybe.
Hardy and Zoe talked to Dante Scarnecchia last night on Radio Row. And that's not Radio Row. At opening night, we're on Radio Row right now. You will hear that interview with Dante Scarnecchia, Patriots offensive line coach, coming up next. Dan's dates at 11:50.
Zolak and Bertrand are live on Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center, presented by DCU Digital Federal Credit Union on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Joining us now here, Dante Scarnecchia here with us on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you.
Another big night. Not getting old for you, I assume.
This is my least favorite night of the week.
What about it do you despise?
I just don't want. I don't like being out here with all these people Look. Around. I just want to go. I just want to leave. I want to be somewhere else.
I want to go watch film.
Do you feel like you've got work to do right now that you should be doing?
No, I don't. I just don't want to be here, but that's all right. We've already talked that.
All right, so let him go.
I've been with this guy forever. And I was telling the stories to the other guy, to the guys the other day. I said the worst part of playing when you couldn't make weight, and Dante used to weigh us in, be me and DiAssi, and we'd be sitting there. Parcells would be like, get his ass down, another 5 pounds, and we sit there and we get in that sauna. Remember that back sauna?
Yeah, I do.
I like, test it. Dante's like, 2.4 more. So we go in there and 2.4 more. Finally get it off. I got the gallon of milk sitting there with about a dozen donuts, and we're chugging it and eating it. And then we're driving home later, and he's running with his – he used to cut his sleeves off his shirt. You probably still do it. You got the tank top type shirt. And he's running down Route 1 on the hill. I'm like, God, I'm like 28 at the time. And I'm like, this isn't the way I'm supposed to train. And here's this guy out there. And he's you left the game. You came back. And I'm telling you, it's about as good as an offensive line as I've seen play a couple games. I know you've had some issues at the end of the year going back to Miami-Pittsburgh. But what clicked post-Pittsburgh from that second half on? It seems like you guys shore things up pretty well, run game and pass.
I hope that's true. I honestly think that we've been a good run team throughout the year. And I think towards the end, you know, we've been feeding Sony quite a bit. And
yeah.
I think we have all along tried to keep balance in our offense with the runs and the passes. There's no doubt about that. And because Josh and I, and all of us collectively on offense, believe in the importance of balance, and I think that's really manifested itself over the last month of the season, and, you know, month of the season into the postseason, and hopefully that will continue on Sunday. We really need to do that.
Based on what you saw from the start of this season, are you surprised to see the run game become as important as it has for this team?
No, because we all strive for that every year. You know, we always, you know, we want to be a team that's able to run the ball and use our run actions to protect the runs and be able to get chunks down the field, all that stuff, you know. And so we think it's all connected. And if you don't take that approach, then you become one way and one-sided, and that really is hard to make things work.
Going back to Sony, is it tough for young guys like rookies to get the ball maybe only 8 times or 10 times? Like, they want to touch it 20, 25 times because that's what they did in college.
Right.
When did it really click for him? Because it seems like he's looking for contact now, where maybe earlier in the year he covered up and get down, where now he's running over safeties trying to, you know, bust it out the backside. The counter seems like it's really is his back cut play.
I think that a lot of it has to do with he hurt his knee and he was coming off that, and I'm sure he was ginger and as far as getting back into it, and I think now he really has a lot of confidence in it, and so consequently you got a guy that wants the ball and gets the ball, and he's doing good things with it.
All right, so you hate this night more than the other night.
Right.
What does the offensive line do wrong that bugs you more than anything else? Is it penalties before the snap? Is it something during the play? What bugs you more than anything else
that
your offensive line will do? Yeah.
Yeah, I really do believe it's the penalty thing. There's no penalty that's acceptable. And you know, we've had our runs of them where, God Almighty, you know, why are we doing this, Pittsburgh? And, but at any rate, I think penalties are direct result of bad technique, poor judgment, lack of concentration, and those are things we can't accept and we don't accept, and they're killers, you know. And you know, we've been all right for the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks doing that, 3 or 4 games, and we got to be clean on Sunday. We can't play these guys from 1st and 20 or 2nd and 17. We can't do that.
You're a tactician, one of the best instructional coaches I've ever been around. I had you as an interim head coach way back in the day when I was nuts, and you had to deal with me. And with Steve, your son, who's now here in Atlanta, was a young kid, liked having him around. You know, father's his coach, you know, and that. He ends up being involved in a game of football. You sit there, and you're in the same place for all these years. You're still coaching for the Patriots. You got the same house in Rentham. I think you still have the same house in Narragansett, right?
We do.
You're comfortable doing what you do, because there's a lot of guys that are bouncing. I'm going to go take this job, that job. Hey, if you tie Sean McVay's shoes, you're going to get a gig in this league and maybe be a head coach. Does that bug you at all, or are you just, I'm glad doing what I do?
No, I've always...
Because you could do that, you know.
I've been one of those guys that always believes that, you know, I'm very comfortable where we are. The grass isn't always greener. I'd have probably married my first girlfriend, but she broke up with me.
That's like a bad country song. The grass isn't always greener. I lost my dog.
We could do that.
We could.
No. All right. I digress. But I'm very comfortable, and this is home for us. New England's home, and that's going to be home. We ain't leaving, so our grandkids are there, and so we're just ingrained in that area. And lucky.
See that there's a lesson to be learned in this. You can lack ambition and still have enormous success. I think there's a lesson in there somewhere, Dante.
Yeah. on Sunday, I had no clue. We've done a bunch of these rallies, and I'm the hem haw guy. They get me out there, get the crowd going and that. And you go outside, and you're there early, and you peek out, and I'm like, okay, there's a lot of fans here. I brought my bags in to travel with you guys at 6 a.m. I said, I'm going to go home, have lunch with Amy, have breakfast with the kids and Amy. And yeah, you can drive me and drop me off. I come back at 9:30, 10 o'clock. I can't get on Route 1.
I know.
I start to panic because now 140 and Rentham's backed up. Thank God the back gate was open by Briggs because I would have never made it. Were you shocked 40,000 fans showed up for a rally?
It was great. I wasn't shocked. I wasn't shocked because that's how they are there. You know. And we have a great fan base, and they're really very supportive. No, I was not shocked.
Last one for you from me. Where do you rank that? You've coached a lot of really good centers. I've done some stuff with David Andrews in the offseason. He's a different cat. He has one outfit that he travels in. It's always the same outfit. I don't think he showers a lot. But where would you rank this center comparative to other centers, good ones, really good ones that you've had?
All right, well, I can't speak for his personal hygiene, so I won't.
That's a joke. He showers. That. You have to
But I do think that, Dave's a good football player, and we've had some good centers, and I think that, he certainly ranks right up there with all of them. He's just a solid guy, smart guy. And they called him Boss Andrews at Georgia because he was the boss. And I learned that from a fan down in Houston at the Super Bowl. Asked me how Boss Andrews was. I said, who the hell is that? At any rate, the kid is revered there, and I think we hold him in very high esteem in New England as well because of what he does.
All right, we appreciate it. Look forward to seeing the family at the welcome party. These never get old for you, man.
You guys, thanks a lot.
You're the best, man. Love you.
Thank you.
Damn it, I'm a Dapper Dan man.
And now it's time for Dapper Dan's Dates of Distinction.
For Dapper Dan.
Zolak and Bertrand from the... What is this again?
It's a Congress something.
Georgia World Congress Center?
Yeah.
Yes, that's where we are. Radio Row. We're in the basement of the convention center here in Atlanta. And Dan Shaughnessy is with us. And even though it's a Super Bowl week, and even though we're on the road, the dates must be delivered.
Bring in the dates.
This hour is Zolak and Bertrand from Radio Row, brought to you by Spiegel Scrap Metal. Okay, Dan, what do we got?
Today is January 29th, for those of you who have not checked. People that were born on this day. Now, this one is dear to me. Hardy's the only guy that'll know, sitting up here, who knows who this is. Beatle, Zoe, do you know...
I hate when this happens.
No, you'll know. Do you know who Catherine Ross is?
No. Catherine Ross.
No. Nothing? Oh, God. Okay. She was the most beautiful actress. She's the graduate. She's,
I was just saying, is she the woman in The Graduate?
Oh, I know who she is.
She's in Butch Cassidy.
Yep. Clean cut, straight hair.
She plays the daughter. Correct?
Well, in what?
No, she plays...
No, she's Elaine. She's what's-her-name's daughter, correct. In Bancroft's daughter, correct.
Right. And wasn't, like, Dustin Hoffman a few years younger than Anne Bancroft movie?
I know who you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, she was my all-time favorite. She's 79 today, which kind of hurts.
Wow!
And she's married to Sam Elliott.
I was going to say, she's married to Sam Elliott. I just looked her up.
Wow!
Coors Beer. The banquet beer.
That's right.
Sam Elliott. She's married to him.
Old Miles.
They met on the set of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
What's for dinner?
Hey, what's up there? I was in Roadhouse.
Anyway,
look at you there, compadre.
Thank you.
Take a swing at me.
Hurts, don't it?
Oh, God. Could you send that picture?
Would you mind if I dance?
What do you got there?
How old do you think Tom Selleck is today?
73.
74.
74. 74 years old today. Big one. I can't believe I didn't know this. This is Oprah's birthday. I mean,
94.
Is she coming to the Super Bowl?
Gotta be.
Oprah's 94. 62.
She is 65 years
old. Stedman going to be there?
Yeah, she's got the Medicare card.
Oh, world. We're at the World
Conference
Center. World Conference Center.
Tall gentleman by the name of Stedman Graham.
We had a little discussion with Jim Gray last night about Stedman
Graham. Oh, we got to talk about that, by the way.
Sketchy. You think Oprah will take her Social Security early, or think she'll wait?
God.
Yeah, she'll probably wait.
You think she's eligible?
She's good. Greg Louganis is 59 years old today.
Louganis.
See, I just got through with Dominic Hasek.
Greg Louganis hit his head off a board.
Off a platform.
Nasty. Off a cement platform.
Thank you. Yeah. Nasty, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's right.
Think that guy was tough?
He's 59 years old.
He kept on. I think he dove like the next day.
They stitched it up and kept going, yeah.
Was it in front of his head or back of his head? I thought it was the back of his head off
back
the platform.
To the left.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Looks like it hurt, though.
So the goalie is 54, Dominic Hasek. Did I say it right?
Yeah. He's 54?
Yeah. I know. Wow. Time flies.
Wow.
How old do you guys think Ed Burns is?
I have no idea.
49.
Nope. 56.
Know, Lenny Clark hates Ed Burns. So next time you have Lenny on.
56.
On a movie set together, he just thought he big timed him.
Okay.
Not a fan. Not a fan of Ed Burns. But
how old is he?
Lenny or Ed? Ed is 51.
Okay.
Is he in Milk Money?
Yeah.
Help me out. I don't know. Ed Burns. He's in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
He's
in Milk Money.
Speaking of Ryan, Paul Ryan is 49 years old today. Mark Gasol. How old do you think he is, Beetle?
I'm going to say he's 39.
He's 34 years old today.
Is that the sports llama?
They do. They
Greasy, grimy sports llama?
Yeah. W.C. Fields was born this day in 1880. He's no longer with us. Robert Frost died on this day in 1963, 3 years after he participated in John F. Kennedy's inauguration. Kansas became a state on this day.
Good for them.
In 34th state, 1861.
Nice and flat.
Okay. A football team was born. The name of the team was born in this state in 1845. It was a poem.
A raven.
Thank you. Very good. So
wow.
It was all over that.
Edgar Allan Poe, the raven.
So the raven was invented in 1845, Edgar Allan Poe.
And that's what the team is actually invented? Named after.
Yes, because it's a Baltimore.
So they named the team after.
Yep. Baltimore. Yep.
Invented or written or published?
It was first published.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't say.
He said invented. It's tough to invent a poem.
He didn't invent the raven.
Yeah. Well.
Right, the raven was already there.
Yeah, raven was there.
They did exist. Key date, 1919, the 18th Amendment was ratified. So you know what that is?
Vote.
No, that's no drinking. That is goodbye. Yeah, 1919. Babe Ruth
Prohibition.
was not a fan of that. Yep, that it lasted a long time, like 8-9 years.
Did you watch that show Moonshiners?
I read something the other day that was interesting, Dan.
Yes,
and it sort of, goes to our graphic on NBC Sports Boston. You at the sort of the counter, the ice cream store there.
Yeah,
ice cream in America sort of had its rise during Prohibition. Because they had bars that were now vacant spaces.
Get out.
And they had refrigeration in many of these spots.
So what are we going to do with all these contraptions to keep things cold?
And not only that, it was like a sugar fix, which was to make up for not getting the sugar from the booze.
Right.
That's how ice cream sort of parlors began, was in Prohibition.
And to this day, both things are still favorites,
Yeah. Ice cream, booze, all good.
Two good things.
I like booze.
Both are still very well loved in America.
Not an ice cream guy.
ice cream, still going strong.
Never have been. Hate desserts.
On this
date,
look at Capello. He's got an ice cream headache.
Remember that.
On this date in 1980, the Rubik's Cube was first appeared.
That was invented.
Joe Tooney.
That was invented.
It
was not like the Raven.
And they published that.
Have any of you guys ever solved it?
No.
Hell no.
Joe Tooney.
Joe Tooney can do it in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I started reading the book. There's, now the accepted method of doing it. And you can teach yourself. It takes some time. But you can teach yourself. And like anybody can learn how to do it.
Sounds
fun. 5 minutes or less, but it's. I just found it to be incredible.
I would have figured you would be a Rubik's Cube guy.
Not really.
Nope.
You know what I did?
I'm with Dan on that.
Good stocking stuffers for kids.
Yeah.
I figured out how to take the middle square off, and it has a screw in there. And you take the screw out, you put it all back together, and screw it in, and pop it in. I solved it. There you go.
On January 29th, two Halls of Fame announced their first classes. 1936 baseball. Hardy, how many can you name? There were five members of the first class of the Hall of Fame.
Babe Ruth.
One.
Ty Cobb.
Two.
Honus Wagner.
Three.
Christie cat.
Yeah,
Christie Mathewson.
Right? Yep.
And
that's
the big,
four.
Big train, Walter Johnson.
Yep.
That was pretty good. So five of the first class, and the first football Hall of Fame had 17 guys, was announced on this date in 1963. I do not have the names of the 17 members of the first.
Ty Cobb was heard to remark, "Well, this is a fine Hall of Fame, but there's an awful lot of minorities here. I'm going to get the hell out."
And amazingly, with 50,
there's a great picture of all five of those guys together.
Is that too loud?
Oh, yeah.
In group of
yeah.
Yeah. It looks like the BBWAA, actually.
Yeah, a bunch of old white guys.
You don't know people like, taking around here.
And the only other date I brought along.
I was doing Ty Cobb. That wasn't me. See, it's a character I do.
That's
called
like Larry David old-timey.
No, they don't care.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you get a couple of head turns over there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Nobody in Atlanta would take offense to that, right?
Oh,
no.
I want the video of that. Okay.
Stay only close. What the?
Run a duck under the table.
You would think with
what that boy from Boston just say?
Boy, when I said something.
You would think
he just said what I think he said.
You would think with 52 Super Bowls, under
white
our
boy
belts,
down there,
that more than one would have been played on this date. But no, one Super Bowl on this date, 1995, 49ers over the San Diego Chargers, 49-26.
I don't remember that being a good game. It wasn't a very good game though, right?
No, blowout
game. And the one factoid from it is my least favorite guy, that fraud Deion Sanders. He became the first guy to play in a Super
Steve
Bowl
Young,
and a World Series.
1 year,
you know,
one year he played in San Fran and got.
He never
the
wanted
ring.
To tackle.
Who's that? Stan Humphries playing quarterback. Yeah. Stan Humphries.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Chargers.
I was at that game. With my dad.
But they had Natron Means back. who else played with
the only Super Bowl on that date?
Say Al, of course. Yep.
Hardy, what was that Ty Cobb line again?
No. I think I may have gotten away with it once. We are not going to push our luck.
Oh, I love that. That was good. That's all I got. That's Dan's dates for January 29th.
Nice.
Oh,
all right, Dan. Well, that was fun.
Are you going to media party tonight?
Might. Aquarium,
it's at the Aquatic Center. Yeah.
It's called the Aquarium.
Are you globe people going to like get your own table and I'll sit there again? Like,
that's
can you guys do anything like separate?
No, you hang out with Ben Volen, you know.
I've run into Trollin Volen more than anybody else here in Atlanta.
There's always one person you see a thousand times.
And it's Tim. He's so far, it's Volen.
My guy 1 year was Jesse Jackson. Every time I went into the hotel, he was sitting there like a piece of the furniture.
That was New York?
It was New York.
New York.
The first three or four times
was
a big deal.
Our good friend Mark Capello got a picture
with
the Reverend.
Yep.
Yes.
You couldn't lose him. I mean, the first couple times, it was like a big deal. And then it was like, oh, my God, Jesse Jackson again in the elevator.
Hanging out in the lobby.
Yeah.
Who else was in the lobby? Was what's his name from ESPN around the horn there?
Kornheiser.
Denver guy.
Wilborn.
Oh, Woody?
Woody. Couldn't shake him.
No, there's always one.
Woody was in the lobby all week. Yeah.
So your guy is going to be Ben Volen this week.
Yeah. All right, Dan, appreciate you coming by here today.
Thanks, have a good Super Bowl.
See you,
Dan. All right, Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe. Coming up in the next half hour, starting just 90 seconds from now, you will hear our interviews that we conducted last night with Matthew Slater, Philip Dorsett, Chris Hogan, Kyle Van Noy, and Cordaro Patterson. We talked to all of those guys. You're going to hear all of this coming up. You will also hear later on in the show our interviews with members of the Rams coaching staff and Rams players. Got a lot to get to here in the next couple of hours. The back half of Zolak and Bertrand on this Tuesday from Atlanta.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.